All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we're picking up this week in Meretz Hashem in Parshas Emor. So at first glance, Parshas Emor doesn't appear to have all that much riveting information. It's primarily occupied with a lot of the halachos concerning the kahuna. And the Torah begins with an exhaustive discussion regarding the laws of tumah and tara, the laws of ritual purity and impurity, vis-a-vis the kohanim. So the Torah says the following, Vayom Hashem al-Moshe, Emor al-Kohanim b'nei Aaron, you shall say to the kohanim, the sons of Aaron, Va'amarta aleihem, and so shall you say unto them, Le'nefesh lo yitama ba'amov. Literally translated, let none of you defile himself for a dead person among his people. So you've actually spoken about this topic in the past. And the truth is, in the past, what I've always found truly intriguing about this idea is that in general, we will discuss the idea of the Kohen as the paradigm of chesed. We're going to get into that theme in just a little bit. So amazingly enough, one would have thought that if there was to be a particular mitzvah with which a Kohen should be occupied, it would be taking care of the dead. Because remember, again, as much as we have many different avenues in the realm of chesed, but again, there is nothing, taking care of the dead is what Chazal referred to as chesed shel emes, pure altruistic kindness. Because remember, again, whenever someone does something nice or does something kind for another, it's never purely altruistic. For the simple reason that there's always the possibility of reciprocity. So if I do something nice for you, as much as I might try to do it altruistically, but at the end of the day, it's quite possible that my hope is that someday, either you'll give me back something, or even if I don't need anything now, in the future, I may need something. And so hopefully, again, if I've done something nice for you, you'll be willing to do something nice for me. The highest level of chesed, therefore, again, is the chesed we do with the dead. For there is no hope of reciprocity. There is no possibility for reciprocity. So amazingly enough, and again, we discussed this last year, or maybe a few years ago. So that being said, why would it be that a kohen is not permitted to engage with the dead? Why is it that the kohen is not permitted to become ritually defiled, ritually impure? After all, again, we would have thought that its primary place should be with taking care of the dead, the ultimate chesed. So, again, we spoke out in the past a number of different approaches. Most notably, and I did not put it on the sheet again for this year, because I assume that you remembered it from last year, from the year before, is Rav Hirsch. Rav Shamsher Lefar Hirsch makes an amazing observation. And Rav Hirsch says so beautifully that when one looks, meaning if you go ahead and you, just in general, if you just travel around, even locally, and you pass by a church, or you pass by other houses of worship, specifically churches, what you will often find attached to a church is a cemetery, right? Meaning, just interestingly enough, there's almost always cemeteries attached to churches. Interestingly enough, shuls historically never had cemeteries attached to them. The only time you will find cemeteries attached to shuls is in Eastern Europe. And why is that in Eastern Europe? Because at the end of the day, there were significant restrictions on Jewish land ownership. And therefore, again, Jews were given, communities were given parcels of land. And on that parcel of land, you had to put the shul, you had to put the beis lahem, you had to put the cemetery, everything was there. But as a model, we don't have our cemeteries next to our shuls. In fact, again, when one looks in the different sugyas, the different sections in the Talmud that deal with the laws of mourning, it is clear that cemeteries were primarily on the outskirts of the city. They were not usually inside the thick of things or the outskirts of the city. So ultimately, again, says Rav Hirsch, so why is it? Meaning, if you think about it, there seems to be something beautiful in having the cemetery next to the shul, right? Because then the shul becomes pretty much like a full-service organization, right? You could be born there, you could be named there, you could be bar mitzvah there, you could be married there, you could be buried there, shalom ha'yisrael. You really get your membership dues worth. You get everything there. So if Hirsch says something amazing, if Hirsch says that we purposely separate our houses of worship from cemeteries for one simple reason, because Judaism is a life-affirming religion. And herein lies a fascinating distinction between Judaism and really Christianity and certainly Islam, which is many other religions. Everyone, all three of the major religions, believe in an afterlife. We all believe in what we call an Olam Haba, Gan Eden, whatever you want to call it. We all believe in that. We all believe, and the truth is, we all believe in the fact that it represents a plane of existence that is close to God. We have our different conceptions, our different, but everyone believes in it. So wherein lies the difference between the Jewish conception of the world to come and the other religions' conception of the world to come? A very simple idea. In Judaism, we are in absolutely no rush to get there. In Judaism, we believe in Olam Haba, but I want to stay in this world as long as possible. Why? Because we believe that this world is the world of dynamic life activity. This world is the world of accomplishment. This is the world where I could do mitzvos. This is the world where I could do tzedakah. I could do chesed. This is the world where I can accomplish. When you die, you know, my friends, the scariest part of death is not the cessation of life. The scariest part of death is that you can no longer do for yourself. When you're in this world, you go out and you put a dollar in the pushka, you can't even imagine the change that you've affected. You go ahead and you pick up the phone and speak to someone who's a shut-in, who's homebound, who's sick, who's out, whatever. You don't know the world that you moved. You open up a safe and you learn Torah for 5 minutes. We don't understand the ripple effect we've had on the entire universe. When you die, those opportunities are no longer available. Whatever you've accomplished over the course of your life, that's what your soul has to subsist on for all eternity. So hopefully you leave behind a family, hopefully you leave behind friends who can continue to do for you what you no longer could do for yourself. But says Rav Hirsch something amazing. The fear is that if you were to put the shul and the cemetery together, somehow one would come with this conception of what's the ultimate goal? What's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to get to the afterlife. And you see this, meaning we see this in a horribly twisted and perverted way with radical Islam today. We see that, again, how people do the most ridiculous things in order to get faster entry into what they consider paradise. And again, even Christianity has many elements of this, that ultimately this world is nothing. The next world is... Now, you'll say, I bet in Judaism we say that also. We say that this world is like a prozdar, this world is like a hallway. So understand, what that means is we understand that this world is temporal and fleeting. But that in no way minimizes or undermines the incredible power, profundity, and importance of life in this world. Therefore, says Rav Hirsch, the Kohen is the person. You see, we often today, I mean, we're 2,000 years out of Beis HaMikdash. So for us, what does the Kohen represent? He's the guy who gets the first aliyah. Right? Or if you happen to be at a Pidyon HaBen, you know, if the universe is, you know, Alania is a Pidyon HaBen, he is the one who redeems the child. Or he's the one that duchens. The truth is, what a Kohen is in the Beis HaMikdash is the Kohen is the ultimate spiritual role model. The Kohen is the ultimate teacher. The Kohen goes in and teaches. In fact, the Sefer HaChinuch says that one of the reasons that we have a mitzvah to be Ola Rega, one of the reasons that we have a mitzvah to go ahead and ascend to Yerushalayim 3 times a year is not just to go to the Beis HaMikdash, not just to offer up our karbanos, and not just to be with one another together, united as a people, but it's to observe and to see the Kohen. There's a concept of just setting your eyes on the Kohen. The Kohen was the paradigmatic Jew. The Kohen was the ultimate spiritual role model. So I go up to Yerushalayim 3 times a year because I need to see that teacher. I need to see that personal role model. Therefore, says Rav Hirsch something amazing. If it's the Kohen's job to teach us how to live, in order to reinforce that duty, the Kohen is forced to remain separate from death. Lest you think that somehow there is a Judaic aspiration for death, meaning we don't fool ourselves. We know that death is in the cards for all of us. We know that at some point in time, each of us are going to leave this world. Hopefully later than sooner, but we know not what life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us. We don't fool ourselves, we don't delude ourselves, but we also don't want to minimize the importance of this world. Because it is the Kohen's job to teach us how to live, he remains separate and distinct from anything to do with death, in order that we not chas v'shalom think that the goal is somehow to get to Olam Haba. The goal of the Jew is to maximize Olam Hazeh, to maximize this world. And you see that, by the way, that also accounts for the differences between regular Kohen and Kohen Gadol. Remember again, a regular Kohen is permitted to become Tamei, permitted to become ritually impure, for again, mother, father, sister, brother, son, daughter, wife. Because again, even a Kohen, as much as he's supposed to be this spiritual role model, still has his own family, still has his own obligations. Yet a Kohen Gadol, the high priest, does not become Tamei for anyone. Because the Kohen Gadol, who is supposed to be the ultimate spiritual paradigm, the ultimate spiritual teacher, he has to be a totally life-affirming presence. He has nothing to do with death, no involvement with death, because his job is to teach us how to live. Good. That was last year's shir. So now, what I want to draw your attention to, however, is what at first glance is not going to appear like such a fascinating idea, but you're going to see how it opens up so many doors. If you'll notice in number one, so I bolded two words over here. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, emor el ha-kohanim b'nei Aaron. Speak to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, va'amarta aleihem, and you shall say unto them, lenefesh lo yitama ba'amov. They should not become defiled to any other Jew. They should stay away from ritual impurity. What I'd like to focus on tonight is the question that almost all of the commentaries raise, which is, why the double lashon? Why the extraneous verbiage? Why does it have to say the two bolded words emor and amart? I mean, it could have just said vayomer Hashem al Moshe emor al hakohanim bnei Aaron lenefesh lo yitama ba'amov. Do not become tamei for any other individual. Why does it have to say emor, say to them, and then amarta a second time again, say to them again? Remember, how many extra words are there in the Torah?
None,
right? No extra words. Every word that Lich Baruch Hu put there is there to teach us a lesson. So when we see a redundancy, when we see something that is not necessary, automatically the antenna goes up because something's unfolding over here. So the basic question we're going to focus on tonight is why the need for both Emor and Amart. In other words, God is telling Moshe, tell them twice. In other words, he gives them directive, tell them. Just say Emor and I don't need Amarta, or just say Amarta and I don't need Emor. Why both Lashonos? Why both words of Emor and Amarta? So if we take a look at number two, so I'll share with you a number of different approaches. The Ibn Ezra takes a simple approach. Ibn Ezra says, Emor lakonim, achar shehisir Yisrael b'nei Aaron b'chlal liosam kidoshim, hisir b'nei Aaron shem chayovim lihishamer midvar macherim, ba'avur shehim mishar se Hashem. So the Ibn Ezra says something amazing. Remember last week's parsha, we read a double parsha, but the immediate parsha that follows parsha's Emor is parsha's kidoshim. In that parsha, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us a simple mandate. Not a simple mandate. It sounds simple, but it's exceptionally complex, which is the mandate of Kidoshim Tiyu. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us the command to be holy. So the Ibn Ezra makes a fascinating observation. So who's included in that obligation of Kidoshim Tiyu? Who's included in that obligation of being holy? And the answer is, everyone is included in that obligation. In this week's parsha, the Torah comes along and adds on additional obligations specific and unique for Kohanim. So the Ibn Ezra says something very interesting. It says, V'tachi lios, perush emor ala Kohanim, kol ha-parsha ha-niskeres, ki ha-torah bi-adam, va-amarta aleihem, ta-meh ha-mitzoh shem chayav m'sham levadam. So the Ibn Ezra says, I'll tell you how I understand the two different verbiages. If you go back up to number one, v'yomer Hashem el Moshe, emor ala Kohanim b'nei Aaron, semicolon. Say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, what should you say to them? Tell them, by the way, that all of the mitzvos and all of the halachos and all of the concepts of kidoshim tiyu, of being holy, that we espoused in last week's parasha, that we espoused towards the general populace of Klal Yisrael, that applies to the Kohanim as well. In addition to that, va'amarta aleihem l'nefesh lo yitam abamav. In addition, tell them that not only are they bound by the Kedoshim Tiyu, be holy, of last week's parasha, not only are they bound ultimately again by the framework of holiness that binds all of Klal Yisrael, but they have additional mitzvos, they have additional obligations of holiness, which are manifest again in this week's parasha, namely the obligations to abstain from becoming ritually impure. Okay, that's the Ibn Ezra, very beautiful. If you look at the Baal HaTurim, in number three, the Baal HaTurim gives another answer. He says, Emar va'amarta, amira rishon shaloli tama, lemeis, va'amira shnia, letame lemeis mitzvah. Very interesting. So the Baal HaTurim says, the first Emar teaches Kohanim that they may not become tame, they may not become ritually impure by coming in contact with the corpse. The second Amarta, the second Dibor, the second command, tells them that there are times that they must become ritually impure. When is a kohen obligated to become ritually impure? When? For something called the meis mitzvah. A meis mitzvah means if a kohen finds a corpse, a Jewish body, just and no one's burying it, the Kohen has the obligation, even the Kohen Gadol, has the obligation to become ritually impure in order to go ahead and show proper kavanah meis, show proper respect, honor, and dignity for the dead. So ultimately, the Baal HaTurim says, one emor, one speech, so to speak, says, don't become tameh. The other speech is va'amarta, but there are times you have to become tameh, namely for a meis mitzvah. Which, by the way, just as an aside, not our topic, but just something you could think about at your Shabbos table, is this is very representative of Yiddishkeit in general. The beauty of Judaism is that we are not a religion of extremes. We are a religion, ultimately, again, of moderation, and we're a religion that understands the need to adapt to different circumstances. So on one hand, you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling the Kohanim, you cannot come in contact with a corpse, except when you have to. So this is the mode of behavior that's appropriate for you, but understand that times in life sometimes require accommodations, sometimes require ultimately exceptions. Kohanim, you are being held to this standard, but sometimes there are other overreaching principles that sometimes, again, could kind of override other pre-existing mandates as well. Just an interesting idea to think about. Fine. So the Eben Ezra says, Emor va'amarta, the first Emor tells them you have to keep the Kiddusha, the Kiddusha Mtio, Vasik's Parasha, Amarta, you have to keep the additional obligations here. The Baal HaTurim, Emor, don't become defiled to the dead except Amarta. There are times when you have to, i.e. Meis Mitzvah. Comes Rashi, number 4. And Rashi says, Emor alakonim, Emor va'amarta, lahazir gidolim al kitanim. So this is quite interesting. Rashi understands the following. The right Rashi reads the pasuk. We just go back up to number 1 for just a moment. Rashi says, the way to read the pasuk is as follows. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Emor el HaKohanim b'nei Aaron. Say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron. What should you say to the Kohanim? The laws of ritual purity and impurity. The laws of Tum and Tara. Convey these laws to the Kohanim. Va'amarto alehem. Now, according to Rashi, the way that we understand that is, Va'amarto alehem means, and tell the Kohanim to tell their children. Tell the Kohanim, after the Kohanim receive it from you, tell the Kohanim ultimately to convey these very same lessons, ideas, laws, halachas to their children. That's what it sounds like. Lahasir gidolim al kitanim. To warn the adults and to tell them that they must convey this information to the children. Okay, an interesting idea. Meaning, what seems to be being introduced here is what concept? Mesorah or chinuch. Chinuch, this idea that it is a parent's job to transmit ideas and ideals to their children. Now, the novelty over here is that, remember, according to Rashi, Lahasir Gidolim al Kitanim sounds like that even if the child is young, a katan is not the physiological definition of being small or being short. It's meaning katan means someone who's underage, someone who's not obligated in mitzvos. So Rashi HaKadosh is saying, Emor lakohanim. So Moshe, you're going to teach the Kohanim these lessons. Va'amarta alehem. And they are going to convey these very same lessons to their children. So the Ramban in number 7 learns a very important lesson. The Ramban says, Lahasir gidolim al kitanim. Lashon Rashi bin Divrei Rabbi Seinu. So the Ramban just points out, Rashi is actually quoting the Gemara. Va'asara hazos. So what's being taught to us over here? What does this mean? That we're obligated to... First of all, what the Ramban is driving at is the following. That, in general, when we speak about this often, every mitzvah has two components. Well, many more, but we'll say for our purposes two components. The first component is the stated meaning of the mitzvah. But every mitzvah also has additional levels and layers of understanding. Because every single mitzvah is applicable for every single person. So you say to yourself, that doesn't make sense. Here, take a look at this mitzvah over here. We're talking about, again, the obligation not to become defiled to the dead. Who does that mitzvah apply to? Kohanim. I'll ask you again. Who does the mitzvah apply to? Everyone. The question just is, there has to be the ability to extract out lessons from this that are applicable to us. I'm not a Kohen. And therefore, again, there is no problem for me to go ahead and become in contact with the corpse. In fact, not only is it not a problem, there's a mitzvah for me to do it, because again, that's one of the ways in which I perform chesed. So as a non-Kohen, I have an obligation. Yet, this is part of the Torah. And every single mitzvah in the Torah contains a lesson for each of us. This is very important, because sometimes when people learn, so they think, oh, those mitzvos are for Kohanim, those mitzvos are for men, those mitzvos are for women, and okay, so I'll choose the category that applies to me. Every single mitzvah has a profundity and has a meaning that is applicable to every single person at every single time. So here, Rashi HaKadosh is telling you in a very specific way that Moshe Rabbeinu give over the laws of Tum and Tara to the Kohanim. Kohanim, give it over to your children. So the Ramban says, okay, what does that mean for me? Ramban wasn't a Kohen. So what? Tell me, what exactly do I learn from this mitzvah? So the Ramban says, Vaz harazos. Lomar shelo nisayeh betumas haktana biyadayim. So ultimately, again, he says, so the Ramban says, this teaches us, and again, he's being specific to the mitzvah over here, that Kohanim should make sure not to defile their children. In other words, should make sure not to actively allow their children to come in contact with any sorts of impurity. You'll see why this is important in just a moment. Uba'u bazaz haras rabas patorak fi midrash rabasinu bidam shatsu etzuma umehem nilmot l'chol isurin shebetorah. So the Ramban says something amazing. What's the lesson here? So the stated message is, Kohanim, teach your children about the laws of Tum and Tara, laws of ritual purity and impurity, so that even before they reach the age of obligation, they already what? Know and stay away from Tum and Tara. Says the Ramban, what's the message for us? The message for us is that we must be vigilant with our children, that they should not do the wrong things even before they go ahead and reach the age of obligation. Meaning a parent might think to themselves, listen, my child's young. What is the big deal if the child flips the switch on and off on Shabbos? Right? Well, it goes without saying the parents shouldn't encourage that, even if you left the light on in the bedroom. Right? The parent, right? But again, what's the big deal? A child is not obligated. There's no obligation. Right? What, do I have to be so careful with what my child eats, with how my child conducts themselves? To which the Ramban says the answer to that is yes. From here, the message is that the same way that the Kohanim are charged with spiritually conditioning their children from a young age, again, in this situation specifically, for the laws of Tum and Tara, what we extrapolate from that is every parent is obligated to engage in the spiritual conditioning of their young. Just because my child is not obligated does not mean that I should not begin to condition. Now again, the Ramban says, but there's a caveat to that. He says, "Aval im yaasu heim ladas atzmon, ein anu mitzuven aleim lahafrisham." If my child happens, however, to do things on their own, I'm not obligated to be the religious police with my 5-year-old. So meaning, and this, by the way, is a very important idea. So this comes up very often, especially with young children. So if my child is playing with something that smokes on Shabbos, so again, if my child is old enough to understand Shabbos, old enough for chinuch, old enough to be taught, then yes, I should teach them. But if the child is young, again, I should not steer them towards the muktzah toy. But if they pick it up on their own, it's fine. It's fine, meaning there is this incredible fine line that on one hand, I'm supposed to spiritually condition my child, right? I'm not supposed to go ahead and actively put prohibitions, isurim, right in their way. But I also have to accept the fact that children are children. And I, as a parent, have to be sensitive to the right time, the right age, the right point in which that spiritual conditioning should begin. So according to the Ramban, there's an incredible, incredible chinuch lesson here. That if chinuch of my child begins when they reach the age of obligation, I'm already too late. I mean, not too late, chas v'shalom, it's never too late. But meaning, if I start my parental responsibility of educating my child at the time when they become of obligation, I've missed prime opportunity for conditioning. The same way, emor elakone b'nei aun va'amarta, So Moshe, you tell them, Va'amarta, they will tell their children. The Ramban says, what do we learn from this? The need to engage in appropriate, loving, meaningful, healthy, spiritual conditioning of our children, even from a very young age. That's the Ramban's lesson. But here's what's amazing, is that many of the Mefarshim kind of ride on the coattails of this Rashi to highlight other important lessons. Take a look at number 8. So says the Magen, and here's what's amazing. All of these beautiful lessons that we're going to learn are all going to come at what appears to be two really unexciting words of Emor and Amarta. So remember again, we have the Ibn Ezra and the Baal HaTurim teaching us the meaning of these words as they apply to the Kohanim. We have the Ramban telling us that the Torah is teaching us a major lesson in Chinuch to begin the spiritual conditioning of our children even from a young age. And by the way, this is not a shir on chinuch, but if it was, what I would tell you is the following. This is incredibly important because what this says is, parents should have expectations of their children from a young age. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if I'm not an old person, but I often find myself talking about modern parenting like it's something. So one of the interesting things about modern parenting is there's almost like no expectations of your kids, right? If my kid misbehaves, they're a kid. Parents should have expectations of children. And parents should have spiritual expectations of children. And on a simple thing, if a parent is raising a son, so ultimately the obligation to daven with a minyan does not begin at bar mitzvah. It doesn't begin at bar mitzvah. It begins at age 10. It begins at age 9. It begins when the child is old enough already. A person has a daughter. The laws of tzniyus do not begin at bas mitzvah. Because we all know, anyone who has daughters know, if you begin a discussion about tzniyus at the age of 12 years old, good luck with that, right? Because again, remember, 12 years old is the equivalent of what used to be like 18. So now again, when you're talking to your 12-year-old, she's an 18-year-old. If that's when the discussion begins, if that's when the sensitivities begin, I've missed the boat. What Ramban is telling us is that chinuch has to start when our children are young. The sensitivities, the expectations, the obligations, again, in a healthy way, in a loving way. Parents can very easily abuse this responsibility and become overbearing and become impossible and have the reverse effect on their kids. That their kids hate the parents, their kids hate religion, the kids hate God, the kids hate everything. Like most things in life, it's a very delicate balance and a very fine science. But the Ramban is telling us, you want to raise frum children? You want to raise children who love the Ribono Shel Olam, who love Yiddishkeit? Start when they're young. Condition them when they're young. Infuse them with positive spirituality when they're young. Create responsibilities. Create proper expectations when they're young. Because if it becomes part of their persona, becomes part of their psyche, becomes part of their life when they're young, then hopefully, again, they'll absorb it as a part of themselves and they'll grow with it. Look at number 8. The Magid of Mezrich. Magid the Mezrich takes a different approach. The Mezrich Magid says, "Perush emar lakonim lemochichem es haolam sheim dveikim b'midas hacheser hamashpia shegam heim mashpiim shemachzirim es haolam mutov lachi nikra b'nei aron midas hacheser." So interestingly enough, the Magid of Mezrich says the following. He explains that the Kohanim, remember we spoke about this before, are the spiritual role models. Kohanim are the spiritual role models. Kohanim are the ones ultimately, again, who teach the Jew how to live. He calls that the Kohen is the mochiach. You know, sometimes to teach, you have to be a mochiach. Now, we translate mochiach as rebuke. But rebuke has such a negative connotation. But sometimes to teach, you have to point out what is right and what is wrong. That's called hochacha. That's called, again, I don't like to use the word rebuke, because like rebuke always sounds like you're scolding someone. But it is the Kohen's obligation to teach the people what is right and what is wrong. So listen to what the Magid says. He says, "Emor aleihem lenefesh leitma ba'amov, ki b'shosh omi lochiach ha'sa'olam." When the Kohen goes in and stands up to go ahead and give hochacha and give instruction to the Jewish people, lo yihye lo gaglus ve'ezo p'niya bazeh, ki ma'abit u'metamei nishmaso. V'zeh shomer l'nefesh, rotze lomar, yehe zoriz v'zor shlo yitama v'yovad nafsho ba'amav, b'shosh shu omi b'soch amav mochiya chosam. So the Mezrich Magid says something absolutely amazing. Totally, dramatically different interpretation. He says, Amar lakohanim b'nei Aaron v'amarta aleihem, say to them, so that, what's the job of the Kohen? The job of the Kohen ultimately, again, is to be the mochiach, is to be the one who gives instruction to the Kohen. You know, sometimes when you are in the role of the one who is giving instruction, it is very easy to chas v'shalom begin to what? Speak down to people. Speak down to people. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Kohen, when you go ahead and you have to instruct, l'nefesh lo yitama, don't defile yourself while giving them musr, while giving them mochacha, while instructing them ba'amav. When you are in the midst of your people, don't lose yourself. You see, by the way, multiple times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes out of his way in all positions of power. Every single position of power brings with it the risk of arrogance. And that's why I see that Ribbono Shel Olam builds in humility to each of our leadership cohorts. So monarchy has its own, we'll call it, humility mechanism. The Kohanim HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, listen, Kohanim, you have awesome responsibility to inspire, to inform, and to instruct the masses. Don't get high on yourself. L'nefesh lo yitama. Don't defile yourself by feeling superior over the other in your role of the kahuna. Incredible insight. Take a look at number 9. So again, these are all just different interpretations, but number 9 is really what I want to focus on. So remember again, we're building on Rashi. We're building on Rashi. Rashi tells us, emor va'amarta, the double lashon, the double wording, lahazhir gidolim al kitanim, to teach the gidolim, the adults, to teach the children. So the Ramban says the lesson for us is a chinuch lesson. Torah sensitizing us how to properly raise and educate our children. Instruction, responsibility, expectations, obligations, conditioning, all must begin when our children are young. Look at number 9. So this is from the Sefer Shvilei Pinchas. Shvilei Pinchas is written by Rav Pinchas Friedman, who is a dayon in Belz, in the Chassidus of Belz. Incredible Talmud Chacham and a beautiful, beautiful writer. See, he points out the following. So before actually I begin reading this, he says, he makes, which I did not put on the sheet, he makes a distinction between, Torah has two different words that it often uses for speech. One is dibarta and one is lemor, right? Daber and amar. What's interesting, daber and amar both translate as speak or say. The difference is that daber or dibarta is lashon kasha, is a harsh speech, whereas amar, the shoresh amar, emor, lemor, amarta, is lashon, is what he calls lashon amira raka, soft speech. So therefore, again, you already see emor lakonin va'amarta, soft speech. So look what he writes here, paragraph aleph. B'derech zuba mesila na'ala, levar ma'ashe shina akasa b'parasha seinu lahaskir etzal kohanim, rak loshon amiru shimidas ha-chesed. Emor lakohanim b'nei Aaron, va'amart aleim lenefesh lo yitama ba'amov. So ultimately, again, he's asking two questions. Number one, our question, which is why emor and amarta? Why do you need both? And number two, why emor as opposed to daber? Why that lashon of emor, right, which is a soft lashon, as opposed to dibor? And he explains very beautifully. He says, because apia mavor bezar hakadosh, kohanim misitra dechesed asu. Kohanim come from the dimension of chesed. Kolomar, hashoresh shel hakohen hu mimidas hachesed. The shoresh, the essence of a kohen is chesed, which if you think about it, by the way, what is a kohen? So a kohen is not just simply a spiritual leader, but a kohen in essence is someone who totally gives up everything for the klal. What do I mean by that? Kohanim don't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. They have no land. They have no ancestral land. Again, they have places they can live, but there's no real kohanic land ownership. Right? A kohen is, right? Let me ask you this question. Is being a kohen an opportunity to get wealthy? No, right? Kohen Gadol is wealthy. Kohen Gadol has to be wealthy. But if you are a regular Kohen, again, you are not going to get rich off this job. Will you have what you need? Absolutely. So pretty much understand that in order to be a Kohen, or as a Kohen, you give up many things in life. You give up your ability to grow your own holdings, to grow your own assets, to acquire your own property. You give up any individual personal aspirations for wealth. And instead, you devote yourself to working for Klal Yisrael. The Kohen, in his essence, is the embodiment of selflessness. That's what it means when it says that the coin comes from the sitra, from the dimension of chesed. The coin in his essence is kula chesed, is all kindness. He goes on, paragraph beis, turn the page. B'derech zuba mesila na'ala, I'm sorry, actually it's paragraph gimel. V'chei mavur b'zor ha'kadosh, v'chesed ha'shem e'olam v'adolam, eino kohani d'asru mesitra, is sitra d'chesed. V'izeh, mavur b'zor ha'kadosh, hatam shetziv ha'kadosh baruch hu l'korn l'varech es Yisrael. By the way, this is why, we'll just say this outside, this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and tells the Kohanim that they are the ones that give brachos. Why are they the ones that give brachos? Because again, in order to truly give a real bracha to another Jew, you have to be a Baal Chesed. And now we begin to understand why it is that when the Torah speaks about the Kohanim, it uses the Lashon of Amar, which is a softer Lashon, because the Kohanim ultimately, again, are people of Chesed. Paragraph Dalet. V'hine ka'asher nisbone nira, kizos haysa midasar shal Aaron HaKohen, Lahamshich chasodim al Yisrael yideshik al yideshik kirvam la Torah kimoshe shnim a Mishnah. So remember again, the paradigmatic coin, of course, is Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen again was the ultimate Baal Chesed. Or as the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, skip the paragraph, hey. And how is it that Aaron HaKohen was able to go in and be such a Baal Chesed? The Ketzarei Mekai Rabbi Yisrael Torah. How was Aaron able to bring people closer to Torah? Kish HaYodea Ba'adam Sha'avar Avera. Haya Mischever Imo. Umar Lo Panum Tzuvos. V'haya Osa Adam Mispay Shva Amar. Ilo Haya Yodea Tzadik Zeh Ma'ase Aroim. Kama Haya Misrachik Mimenu. Mimeni. Umitoch Kach. It's actually quite beautiful. How did Aaron do Kiruv? How did Aaron get people to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He loved them. He loved them. He maintained a close connection to them. So what do people say to themselves? If I'm a Baal Avera, I did things wrong, and Aaron HaKohen is coming over to me, he's putting his arm around me, he's hugging me, he wants to be close to me, and I say to myself, oh my gosh, if Aaron knew who I really was, if Aaron knew what I really did, he would want nothing to do with me. But now that Aaron has this relationship with me, I have to better myself. I have to lift myself. So amazingly enough, Aaron HaKohen was able to get people to change their lives without one word. Isn't that amazing? He never had to give Musar. He never had to give fiery drushas. He never had to give rebuke, nothing. He gave one thing, and that was love. He gave his unconditional love. And people felt, if I'm in such close proximity to this great man, I have to be worthy of this relationship. And in order to be worthy of this relationship, I have to lift myself up to new heights. An incredible, incredible idea. Umitoch kach, last three lines of paragraph, hey. Umitoch kach, hayachozer lemutov, vahusha anavi meyed alav, b'shalo v'meshar halach iti, the rabbim heishiv ma'on. Paragraph vav. V'zeo sheid anavi b'shvacho. So if you skip down a little bit, into the last three lines of paragraph vav. Nimtzeinu lemeidim izeh. Ki Aaron HaKohen limeid es kol Yisrael Torah. Va'al yideizeh himtik mehem es hadin bebechinas Torah chesed. This was the great kindness of Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen gave of himself to the other. And by giving of himself to the other, he brought the other closer to him. By bringing the other closer to him, he awakened within the other a desire to be better. By the way, it's an incredible insight. If you want to get people to change, and by the way, this is true on so many different levels. You know, sometimes even in the course of marriage, there are shalom bias issues. It could happen. It's been known to happen. Right? There could be shalom bias issues. And sometimes, again, one spouse gets so angry at the other for legitimate reasons. Sometimes, again, I might have done something legitimately wrong. But sometimes, again, what spouses don't realize is, if your spouse feels that you dislike them, that you're upset at them, that you're looking down on them for what they have done, there's no motivation for the offending spouse to change. But if you tell them, I love you, I care about you, I'm really angry at you. You know, you could love someone and be exceptionally angry at them at the same time. But I care about you and I want to still have this connection to you. That connection, that knowledge that I am loved by someone, often gives people the ability to rise above their imperfections, to transcend that which is broken upon them, and gives them the courage and the optimism and the hope to be able to fix it. This is not me talking, this is what Aaron HaKohen did. You think Aaron just randomly went over over to people, Arnakoin knew exactly who he was targeting. See, he had a choice. He could have gone over to them and blasted them for their averos, and blasted them for their misdeeds. And what would it have done? What happens when you make someone feel like a nothing? They stay a nothing. If you go ahead and you beat someone down, people think that when you beat someone down, no one ever says, oh, you know what? I feel like a piece of garbage. Now I'm really going to make myself into something. Most people don't act that way. Most people, when they're made to feel like a piece of garbage, usually stay in the garbage. So Aaron HaKohen could have gone and blasted him, but he doesn't do that. Instead, what he does is, he says, listen, he says, I'm not going to say a word about your averos. I'm not going to say a word about your impression or a word about what's broken about you. Instead, what I'm going to do, I'm going to love you. I'm going to love you. I'm going to give you of myself. I'm giving myself to you. I'm entering into a relationship with you. And that love, Aaron's like, look, we both know what you're doing and what you're not doing. But I'm not going to say a word. I'm hoping that the love I give you gives you the confidence and gives you the courage to be able to change what is broken about you. Paragraph Zion. He goes on. He says, Hine, ki kein ya'iru einenu v'yismach libenu lahavin ma shebarach HaKadosh Baruch Hu ledabra lakohanim beloshna mira raka shemida sachased v'yom Rasha Moshe emor lakohanim b'nei Aaron kilomar me'achar shem b'nei Aaron shem shechasad ma'yisrael. So again, now we understand why when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to the Kohanim, he uses what lashon? Emor. Emor, because the lashon, the wording, the word emor is what type of wording? Lashon raka, soft, which speaks to, I should say, the midah of chesed, the attribute of kindness. So whenever you go, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to the Kohanim, he's reminding the Kohanim, I want you to know, your strongest trait, your greatest strength is not your ability to rebuke, your greatest strength is your ability to love. Your greatest strength is your ability to give of yourself to the other. Look what he says, paragraph Ches. V'zeu shosef HaKadosh Baruch Hu lomar v'amarta aleihem. She'al kach darshu chachomim zal emar v'amarta lahazir gidolim al ketanim sholiach ziku es ha-Torah shalomdam rak li'atzman. And here, the Shulei Pinchas says something absolutely amazing. See, here's what we've got. The Ribbono Shel Olam is speaking to the Kohanim b'lashon Amar. Why Amar? Because Amar is lashon raka, it's a softer speech, it's the speech of chesed. Kadosh Baruch Hu is reminding the Kohanim, you are the people of chesed. Your greatest ability is to go ahead and give of yourselves to the other. So what happens? He then adds in amarta. Emor va'amarta. And Rashi says, why the double lashon? Emor lahasir gidolim al kitanim. Meaning, the way Rashi reads the pasuk is, the first part of the pasuk is the instruction to the kohen, or the kohanim. Vayomer shel Moshe, emor la'kohanim b'nei Aaron. So then, va'amarta aleihem is the Kohanim's job to go out and to teach someone else. So Rashi says, who are the Kohanim obligated to teach? Lahasir gidolim al kitanim. So far, Rashi, the Ramban, says referring to who? Who? The children. Says the Shlei Pinchas, no. Lahasir gidolim, the gidolim, the great ones, are the Kohanim. The kitanim, the young ones, are the rest of Klal Yisrael. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling the Kohanim one simple thing. Shelo yachziku es haTorah shelamdu rak li'atzmam. Do not keep your Torah. Do not keep your spirituality. Do not keep your holiness. Do not keep your goodness to yourself. Share it with others. Eliyasiru gam es haketanim lelamdam darchei Torah lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav shelo yiplu chas shalom bereshes hayitzra metamei es ha'adam va'al yidei zeh yamshichu chasadim al Yisrael bebechinas emir haraka. So the Shulei Pinchas advances what I think is just a magnificent idea. If you look back at number one for just a moment, we could read it in the pasuk. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe emor al hakohanim. So Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, Emor lakohanim. Emor lakohanim b'nei Aaron. What are you telling them? You're telling them one thing, which is Emor. What's the message of Emor? Emor is lashon raka, soft lashon, soft speech, which represents chesed, kindness. Remind the Kohanim that their greatest strength is in their chesed. So what should they do with their chesed? Va'amarta aleihem. So tell them to go out and say to others, lahazir gidolim al kitanim, to teach the great ones about the small ones. Tell the Kohanim to go out and impact the klal. Tell the Kohanim to go out and impact their nation. Tell the Kohanim not to be ivory tower tzaddikim who closet themselves by themselves and turn all of their resources inward. Instead, va'amarta aleihem, tell them to go out and spread their chesed to the people. And by doing that, va'amarta aleihem, l'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav. If the Kohanim love the people, if the Kohanim follow in the example of the Zayd of Aaron, and they go out, and they love every Jew unequivocally, and they go out, and they love even the sinner, then you're going to see that even the sinner has the ability to rehabilitate himself. So according to the Shulei Pinchas, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching the Kohanim by extension us is an incredibly powerful Yisod. The Ribono Shel Olam gives us each incredible kohos, gives us each incredible strength and incredible talents. And very often we are tempted to take those talents, abilities, and strengths and just simply turn them inward. I want to build myself. Building yourself is very important. But the best way to build yourself is through building the other. Va'amarta aleihem. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you, whatever kohos, whatever strengths, whatever abilities you may have, va'amarta aleihem. You have to somehow use them to impact your klal. You have to use them to impact your people. You have to use them somehow to love and to blanket the other with that love so as to encourage them to grow and to become greater. So the koach of the coin, the great gift of the coin ultimately is what? Is his chesed. So some of us are bali chesed, some of us have other types of kohos. Whatever your koach is, whatever your ability is, the goal is don't turn it inward. Or turn it inward a little bit, but also, again, maximize it in its use, not just for yourself, but figure out a way to use it for your kehila, for your community, for your people, for mankind. Figure out how to take your kohos and somehow make a difference in your world. If you take a look at number 10, this is actually the Mishnah we're learning at Pirkei Avos on Shabbos. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinoi Omer. Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinoi says, Haneir ba'layla, if one is awake at night, v'amahalich b'derech yichidi, or one walks on the road alone, v'amefanali ba'levatala, and turns, or someone who turns his heart to idleness, hareze mischai b'nafsho. Ultimately, again, he's forfeited his life. He's responsible for forfeiting his life. What does this mean? Now, I just want to draw your attention to one piece, which is, Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinoi says that someone who walks on the path alone is not doing the right thing. What does it mean to walk on the path? Well, look at paragraph Gimel. Omeres HaMishnah, HaMahalich B'derech Zu, B'derech HaTorah V'HaMitzos Yechidi. If somebody walks down the path of spirituality, but they're just walking alone, Harezim is chai b'nafsho. That's a terrible atrocity, spiritual atrocity. Zeu adam shaholich batzmo b'derech HaTorah V'HaMitzvos, aval ino misametz lahanchila lezulaso. To walk down the path of spirituality and not try to enfranchise others. To walk down the path of spirituality by yourself and not to share your abilities with others. Eino dorg lahadrich ulechanich es acherim. He's not concerned with leading or educating others. Ulahafitz sobram to teaching Torah to others. Hu chai bitchusha shel shalom alai nafshi v'ani es nafshi tzalti. He lives a life of saying, you know what? I need to focus on me. Zos afshi yesh bekocho lahatos acherim ledarko derech haTorah v'hamitzvos. A person like that who is mahalich b'derech yechidi. You know, sometimes you can walk on the right path in life, but if you're walking all alone, it's the wrong path. If you're not bringing others with you, if you're not influencing others, and when I say influencing others, I don't mean that you have to set up a little booth on the side asking people if they put on tefillin yet. I mean, that's beautiful, it's magnificent, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about loving people. Just simply giving people of our love, giving people of our chesed, whatever koach, whatever talent, whatever ability, whatever strengths you have, figure out a way to share those kohos, those abilities, with those around you. That's how you enfranchise people. People remember very little of what you say. They remember a lot more of what you do. And if you blanket someone with love, if you blanket someone with acceptance, if you draw someone into, if you take that which makes you, you, your abilities, your unique traits, and you use it for the other, that's how you draw someone in. But if you just end up walking down the path of God by yourself, okay, it's nice, at least you're on the right path, but the path of the lone path, the path that one goes on all alone, is not only lonely, but it's empty. the goal of the Jew is to try to go ahead and bring in the other. So if we bring this all together, what we have over here is something exceptionally dramatic. From two little words of Emar va'amarta, we really learn three dramatic lessons. We learn according to Rashi, or I should say, based on Rashi's interpretation, of lahasir gidolim al kitanim, that the emor amarta, emor is to the gidolim, to the kohanim, amarta is to the kitanim, to the young ones, to the little ones. From the Ramban, we learn an incredible lesson, a lesson in parenting, a lesson in chinuch, a lesson in education. Educate and instill values within children when they are young. Conditioning, spiritual education, spiritual expectations must begin when children are young. I know they're not obligated. I know, again, and the expectations have to be realistic, but the more we inculcate that spirituality as part of their psyche from the time that they are young, the better the chance that they will take it with them. The Magid of Mezrich teaches us again another incredible lesson. Lesson number two, which is that sometimes a person has to be in a situation of rebuke or in a situation where they have to teach or instruct the other. When you have to teach or instruct the other, never lord over the other. Make sure that even if for some reason your station is higher than the other, you never allow your arrogance to get the best of you. Third lesson from the Shvilei Pinchas, that Emor Va'amarta means the following. There's two messages here. There's the message to the Kohanim, and there's the message to us. The message to the Kohanim, the Chash Baruch Hu reminds the Kohanim, Emor, you are Emor people. You are people of Chesed. You are the descendants of Aaron HaKohen. Everything and anything you are is rooted in your ability to be Baalei Chesed. How do you demonstrate that Chesed to the other? You follow the example of your Zayda. Your Zayda Aaron HaKohen showered people with love and acceptance. You shower people with love and acceptance. Your Chesed is the giving of yourself to the other. And the Kaddish Baruch Hu tells the Kohanim, I'm telling you, that the same way your grandfather Aaron brought people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not through what he said, not through his lectures or his shiurim, nothing like that, but just simply through his love. You Kohanim, if you love every Jew and bring them, if you give them your midah of chesed, you will bring them close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the lesson for us, those of us who are not Kohanim, the derivative lesson is so profound as well. The goal in life is that each of us have kochos, each of us have abilities. And it's easy to take those abilities and those strengths and turn them inward and use them for the bolstering of the self. But that is not what the Jew does. The Jew says, here are my kochos, here are my abilities. How can I share them with the other? How could I impact them? How could I impact the other with them? How could I make the other feel loved with the abilities and strengths that I have? How could I bring the other closer with the abilities and the strengths that I have? Because I don't want to walk on the path, let me say it differently. I want to walk on the path of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I don't want to walk on it alone. Because to walk on it alone without influencing others, not through your words, but through your deeds, through your love, through your unconditional acceptance, through your traits and characteristics, to walk on that path alone is a very unfulfilling Yiddishkeit. That's the Emor Va'amarta lesson for the rest of us. The Kohanim have their chesed, and it's that chesed ultimately again that enfranchises the rest of the klal. Each of us have our abilities, our strengths, our character traits. And if utilized correctly, not only do they bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they bring us closer to one another as well. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight.